Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, good evening. I feel like I said good afternoon. Welcome, welcome, welcome. We're back here on one of our fun Sunday afternoons, and naturally, we always start off with love. The topic of today is economics, but we're going to start off with a little love here because if we don't know how to love each other, don't know how to act towards each other, how are we going to get along in groups? How are we going to get along in family? And the one percenters, oh boy, am I on their case all the time. They do not want you to know how to love each other. And that's for sure. Because if you learn how to love each other, all the strife and the fighting and arguing amongst each other back and forth to the family and groups, all that would disappear. Because you wouldn't commit acts towards each other that don't make the other person feel good, you know? And I think that's important because we have to learn how to treat each other, learn how to act toward each other, learn how to be things so that we can be around each other better. You know, you got families that don't come together because there's no love. It's not, there's not the potential for love. They just don't know how, you know? So this is what we're talking about now. Now, if you can just remember, love is the act that makes others feel good. Now, if you or to make the other person feel good, if you're thinking about committing an act and you know the people that you're around, you know how they are, and you know that this act that you're getting ready to commit will not make them feel good, well, don't commit. This is what we're trying to tell you. Don't commit the act. Only commit acts that are going to make the other person feel good. That's why Yahshua, whom you call Jesus, said love your enemies. And you say, how in the world can I love my enemy? That's crazy, you know? But when you think of just treating even your enemy with acts that make them feel good, see what I'm saying? Then you can love your enemy. You know, you don't have to get all emotionally tired where you all of a sudden are chasing the enemy around, stalking the enemy. That's not really love. That's almost a sickness, you know? Emotionally being emotionally out of control, all right? So that's why I always start off with love because it's so important. If we're going to raise our villages, and that's where I'm headed for this week and beyond. We're headed towards raising the village, okay? Now, we're talking about economics. That's our topic for today, all right? Now, what are you being trained for? You send your children to school. You go to school. You come out of school, the top colleges on the planet with a resume in your hand, okay? You don't come out with a business plan to create jobs. You come out with a resume to look for jobs. Now, there's something wrong with that picture, okay? Because if you're trained, they're training you not to become IBM. They're training you to work for IBM. So if they're training you to work for IBM, okay, just think about this for a minute. If they're training you to work for IBM, then they have a hidden agenda in mind because they don't want you to become what they are. They want you always to be subservient to them. They want you always to be under them. Now, this system is set up as a class system. Now, they dogged India about the class system when they had the untouchables and people couldn't claim this and all that. You know, they were supposed to claim this. They would call them the untouchables because they were the lower class in the Indian society. India society. We get the term India. It's a little confused because that's how they have programmed us, okay? Because the people that are here that they call it Indians, they're not really Indians, okay? They have different tribal names and cultures and stuff like that there, you know? When I say India, I'm talking about India, like India and Pakistan, you know? They want to take an untouchable class system, and they talked about them like a dog, okay? Now, we have a class system here. They're using the class system. This is what the 1% does. They're using the class system as a methodology to control the populace. I'm going to say that again. You didn't hear that. Well, they're using the class system as a methodology to control the populace, okay? Now, how are they controlling the populace with the class system? The so-called middle class, I say so-called, because if you're not making at least $1 or $2 million a year, you can't be calling yourself middle class, because the first class, they're getting paid, you know? And to be in the middle class, you got to really be up there getting that money. So we have the so-called middle class because now there is they use anything that they can, and they try to keep us separated and divided by any means necessary because that's how they gain their power. I've talked on other shows about us being gods, and then we talk about the great God. Whoever controls portions of the great God actually controls the power. They control the money. Okay, if you control like 10 or 15% of the great God on the planet, you are paid. You got wealth. You can also set up your military and things of that nature. Okay, if you're heading in that direction, which is the direction that we should be going into. Okay, now they have most of the. And let's just deal with the United States right now. Most of the Europeans, okay, they're pushing their. They're pushing the Europeans toward the middle class. And it gives them a superiority complex and a big think difference, feel difference, because they feel as though they're of the middle class. And they're not poor, they're not destitute, they got enough money to pay $100, $200 for a fee to do football games or basketball games and stuff. That's the middle class. The middle class is very much responsible for keeping the upper echelon upper. You know, the poor and working class, they're responsible for keeping the middle class, all right? Because a lot of the restaurants and stuff that the middle class have opened, a lot of the stores that they open, first class people don't use those places, all right? They don't really go into McDonald's and Geno's or Chicken Joe's. Well, we don't have Chicken Joe's no more. But they don't really go into these places because with the type of money that they have, they don't get involved in the places where the middle class go. So it's the poor and working class that keep the middle class. And as the middle class, they're actually managers of the poor and lower class, if you really stop and think about that for a minute, you know. That's why the managers make a certain amount of money, because they have to manage the lower classes. This is a class system. We should be working to get rid of this class system because it's not really what it seems, because in reality, there is no middle class. There's just the rich and the poor. But they have the middle class with this illusion that they're middle class. And they're not middle class. They think they make $100,000, $150,000 a year. Oh, boy, you know. I'm the middle class, but you're not. Because when you think about the first class money, now if Oprah Winfrey was making, if you're in the middle and Oprah Winfrey was making twice what she was making, she'd consider herself broke, you know, because there actually is no middle class. And we should be working on ways to let people know and to tell people what they need to do in reference to breaking this class system mentality down. Because if this was actually a democracy, there would be no class system. But this is not a democracy. This is a republic. When the teacher in school, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, because this is a republic, okay? It's not a democracy. They don't have democracies nowhere on the planet, and they're not really trying to create democracies, because if we start creating real democracies, then the people would actually come together and have more power, and they're not trying to share power at all. You know, that's not how that works, okay? Now you know you're under a class system, but how are you able to break off from one class and go into another class? It all depends on how you handle your money. That's what it comes down to. It depends on how you handle your money. And every time we talk about economics, I always teach this because I want Well, I shouldn't use the term teach, but I always like to share this information or give this message because this is something that's so important for the children to learn. If you don't get it, remember it and tell it to your children because they need this if they're going to break the cycle that this class system had them mentally set up for. And that system is the 50% budget. I know you hear it all the time. Every time we talk about it, every 2 or 3 weeks, I'm talking about this 50% budget. But it's so important, you know. Let me tell you how it works so that your children or you can break through into whatever class that you want, all right? Now, this is how it's supposed to go. When you come out of high school, all right, now this is what you tell your children. This is when it's supposed to start. When you graduate high school, all right, you get 2 jobs. Doesn't matter what kind of job there is. So don't be picky, whether you're working at Mickey D's or Checkers or wherever. Don't be picky about the job. Target, don't care where you're working at. They're paying a little $10 an hour. Okay, you get 2 jobs. How does this work? Each job gives you 2 days a week off. So for 4 days, you're only working a single shift, okay? And for 3 days, you're working a double shift, but you're working 7 days a week. Your break comes from the 4 days that you're only working the one shift, okay? Now, you save the money from one job, and you live off the money from the other job. That's the 50%. Most jobs pay $10 an hour, which will give you $20,000 at the end of 2 years, all right? Once you do that, go to sheriff's sale. Don't just go straight to the real estate because it's just too much. It costs too much money and the mortgages are too high. You don't want to start off with a mortgage when you buy that first property. Go to sheriff's sale or foreclosure. They got properties that they start bidding on at $5,000 or $6,000, okay? You got $20,000 to get that first property. My suggestion is that the first property be a 3-story building. Take the first floor, funk it out, make a nice little efficiency out of that sucker. Fix the other 2 floors up, rent them out. Now you got residual income. Somebody else, that's economics, is residual income. Somebody working and paying you. Now you have people working and paying you rent. Now you got 2 properties. Keep working your jobs. You're collecting on 2 properties. You get a couple of more buildings like that. Then you can quit 1 job. Get a couple more buildings. You can quit the other job. Now you're strictly living off your residual income. You got money for college. You got money for that Mercedes or whatever you want to buy. You can purchase that house because the first few houses that you buy should not be for your permanent residence. They're to make money. Okay, I'm going to say that again. The first few houses you buy should not be your permanent residence. They're for making money. Now, after you get enough, purchase enough where you can buy that house with the 3-car garage, swimming pool, jacuzzi, and all that, whereas you don't have to work a job to pay for it, you're in good shape, okay? Now, if you want to go to college, you want to go here, you can do whatever you want. And you can keep this process going until you make. What can you end at? It's an unlimited process. You can go into the millions through real estate. You know how real estate is. You know these guys on television talking about how to flip houses, how to make money. The real estate industry is fat. It's residual, and it's the easiest one to get into, quiet as it's kept. Now, there's other ways that you can have residual income. So I'm not cutting a record, writing a book, making up poems. If you got money, your money can make money for you. As long as something is working and making the money other than you, okay, then you have residual income, okay? That's a 50% budget. Now, if you're already out of school, already out of college, you're growing, you got your children, you can still work the 50% budget. And now, you have to think in terms, if you can't save half the money that you make, you're living beyond your means. Start cutting back. You don't need name brand stuff. You walk around buying these name brand sneakers. Tell you what you do. Look inside the shoe, the sneak, the clothes. See where they're made at. They're made in Taiwan. They're made in all these little countries where they're not paying the people no money. It's coming from China and places like that there. They're cheap sneaks with somebody's name on it. You can buy the same sneak that you're paying $100 for $20 to put your name on it. Your name is just as good as anybody else's, right? You see what I'm saying? But you don't have to spend the kind of money that you're spending. You can stay away from the name brands, you know? If you want a name on something, have your name put on your clothes. Have your name embroidered on your suits and everything, okay? Now you got a name brand, your name brand is on the clothes, and you're not spending all that money. I bought suits, three suits for $100, okay? That's what I'm saying. This is as you're building. You don't have to spend a whole lot of money for things. As you're building, as you're trying to build income, okay? Well, not build income, but as you're trying to build wealth, all right? You do not have to be broke. There's a way to break the cycle, and you don't. You've noticed, now I don't know if you notice this or not, but if you notice, I never mention bank. I never asked you to go to the bank, asked you to borrow from the bank. I never talked about getting loans from the bank, and I never talked about credit. See, cash is king. People talk about credit, but if you got cash, you don't actually need the credit. You say, well, I want a new car. If you got the cash, go in and buy it. Just go buy the car, you know. You don't need credit if you got the cash to pay for the car. What do you need credit for? You want to buy a house, you got the cash to pay for the house, pay for the house. You don't have to go to the bank to borrow no money. You don't see the banks actually need you. You really don't need the bank if you're using the right thought process to get what you want. I never mentioned bank, okay? Now, if you want to use a system, I'm not saying don't use the system because this system can get you fat quick too, all right? A lot of times if you have the money and you don't want to use your money, okay, go borrow the money from the bank. Use the bank's money. But you have the money to pay the bank one way or another. You already have the money. If you got to borrow money from the bank, you shouldn't borrow money from the bank if you need to borrow money from the bank. I know that sounds a little crazy. But if you need to borrow money from the bank, you shouldn't borrow money from the bank. Okay? Only time you borrow money from the bank is if you don't need the money. And you want to keep your money on the side, and you got some investment coming up, you invest with the bank's money, okay? That way, if it don't work out, well, if you bought some property or something that you're investing in, it don't work out, let the bank take the property, but you still got your money, all right? So you can do it that way. But that's a rule of thumb. If you need to borrow the money from the bank, you don't need to borrow from the bank. That's a rule of thumb. That's to keep you out of hot water, okay? Now, we're finished that little portion of economics. Now, remember, economics is somebody else working and paying you, okay? Now, we're going to get into another segment, but now, if you have a comment or you want to say anything, you can just hit one on your phone and let me know that you have a comment and you want to say something. And once again, I'd like to thank everybody that's calling in for calling in. We appreciate you letting me know that I'm not alone out here. Thank you so much. That somebody's listening, okay? Now, here's the next question that I have. Can you be a dual citizen in the United States? You can, okay? Now, I've been listening to a lot of the brothers and sisters talk about their status, changing their status, getting into correct status, you know. There's trouble that goes with that. There's good and there's bad, okay? Now, if you completely change your status and out of the system, then you can't use a lot of things that the system has for you, okay? We're talking about welfare. We're talking about benefits. The big corporations, I'm talking about these multi-million-dollar corporations, get welfare. They get benefits. They just call it by another name, all right? So you can switch. Right now, I have two statuses. Okay, I'm getting benefits from the government. Whatever they want to give me, I'm taking it because they owe me more than whatever they're giving me. Right, when I go out as a citizen, all right, I take my citizen IDs and stuff with me and leave my other IDs home. And when I go out as a free person with my correct status, I take that ID with me and leave my other ID home. You follow what I'm saying? Depends on what I'm doing. So I got two different status situations going on in this country. So I don't know about dual citizenship, but you can have two different statuses. So I'm getting my benefits, but I can do the other thing that I want if I want to. So you have options. So that's what I encourage people to do. View your options. You don't have to opt out of the federal government to get your freedom. You know what I'm saying? You can do both. I know you don't hear people tell you this too often, but you got to do your own research, because everything that people are doing sometimes might not be for you. All right? Those of you who decided to use the system, use the lending system, the banking system, the credit system, and all that, then but sometimes if you want to move in a different way, you need both statuses. You can do that. You can double up. You can have dual status right here in the United States without being from another country. I'm serious. You can do that, all right? So, but there's ways to do that, but you have to do your research. So when you get it, when you go into these people that are talking about the status and dual citizenship and all that, you know, there's a normal thought process that the country takes you to for dual citizenship and all that. But then there's an underground process that you can go to too. So you need to study both processes. And I think that there is a website that you can go to that will give you some of this information. One of them is called Think Free, Be Free. You can go to that website, and they'll give you some information. And then another one is Bible-based. This one is Bible-based, and it shows you how to use the Bible as a law book. The Bible is very powerful. I'm a Bible thumper. I'll tell you in a minute. But this Bible is very powerful, and they have sites that go to show you how to read this thing from a legal standpoint that can help you in your dual status and stuff right here in this country. I think that site is called SEDM.org. I'm going to say it again, because you might want to write it down. SEDM.org. And the other one is, all right, you can go to those two sites, and this will get you on your journey. And if you don't know anything about any of this, what I'm talking about, those of you who are listening, you don't know anything about this, go to the website, look up Straw Man, and read that article that they have on the Straw Man. That will get you started, because you're actually two different statuses already, okay? You are a corporate being, and you are a live being who is considered dead, okay? I ain't gonna get too much into that, but once you read the Straw Man, then you'll see that you have two statuses already. So this dual thing, being in this country without being from another country, it's nothing new. But the thought process that I'm giving you, people don't think about it like that, okay? So you can keep the two statuses if you want, right? But you have to learn how to manipulate one and the other. You don't have to give up the corporate status in order to become the live being. You really don't have to do that. You can keep both. I'm living proof, because that's what I do, all right? Okay? And if I want certain benefits from the government, I can get it, okay? But if I want to travel without being harassed as a corporate citizen, I can do that too. I have the ID. But when I drive with my ID that's not connected to the system, when they stop me for something, the only thing they can do is give me a warning, because I'm not under their jurisdiction. They can't mess with me, you know? If I be speeding, and they look at my ID and say, okay, we're going to give you a warning, but you have to be careful. I say, yes, sir, I sure will. Never got a ticket. They won't give me a ticket or anything, because I'm not under their jurisdiction. See what I'm saying? So they can't mess with me. And and you can do that too, but you have to study. You have to do your research, all right? Because you get out there and you don't know what you're doing or what you're talking about, you're going to be in trouble, because they ask you questions, you know? They ask you questions. Where do you live at? I'm not domiciled in this area, sir. You see what I'm saying? I don't have a domicile in their jurisdiction. Now, you're saying, well, how do you get this type of thought process? It comes out of the Bible. It comes right out of the Bible. Where is that in the Bible? Remember when they were trying to crucify Jesus in the Bible, right? He did not claim to be Hebrew. So the Sanhedrin didn't have jurisdiction. And when he went to Pontius Pilate asked him, hey, where are you from? He said, my kingdom is not of this world. So the Romans didn't have jurisdiction. That whole thing was about a jurisdiction issue. Since neither one of them had jurisdiction over him, they were bouncing him back and forth because neither one of them do anything. See, a lot of times it just depends on how you read this Bible, you know. And the 1%, oh, man, they have taken this Bible and conquered the planet. And because the ministers and the preachers and the churches and the mosques aren't teaching us how to read the thing, when we read it, it just sounds like a bunch of gibberish. You know what I mean? Because a lot of it don't make sense, you know, if you don't know how to read it, all right? But you can have a dual status right here in this country based on the straw man article if you know how to do it. But you have to do your research. You really have to study, you know. And that's one thing I like about Brother Will I Am. He knows a lot about this stuff. He tries from part of giving people a message every week when he's doing, okay? Now, now here's my next question, right, that we're getting into. What is the only status that the 1% respect? Think about that. That's a very important question because you got the Moors and all these other groups talking about you got to get your status right. I was thinking about the federal government. You think that when they attack these countries, that these people don't know their status? Don't care what your status is. When they come with that military power, they went into Vietnam. You think the Vietnamese didn't know their status? Sure, they knew their status. They don't care. The only status, okay, that the 1% respect is your military status. That's all they respect. They might let you go with different things, but when they get tired of you, they send the military in to shut you down. Saddam Hussein, you think Saddam Hussein didn't know his status? He go there talking trash. We had a mother of all wars. He was talking trash. The military he had was the one they gave him, the equipment, that old obsolete equipment they gave him. When they got tired of him, what did they do? Went in and shut him down. They don't care what his status was, okay? Same thing with Manuel Noriega. In Panama. Okay, this guy's the head of Panama, Panamanian government. You think he didn't know his status? Don't care about that. They went in, shut him down. Okay? Locked up an elected official of Iraq, you know, because they had the best, because Iraq didn't have the military status. You see what I'm saying? If Kim Jong-il, the guy they talk about now, if he didn't have nuclear capabilities, and didn't have the military that he had, they'd have been shut him down. They don't respect him, but they respect his military status. That's what they respect. And don't get it twisted. All those groups talking about status, the federal government only respects your military status. They'll let you get by with a whole bunch of stuff, especially if you're not a threat. And most of the groups in this country are not a threat to the 1%. The ones that become a threat to the 1%, they move in, shut them down. Think about the Panthers. They moved in, shut them down, okay? Because they didn't have a strong enough military to protect themselves. See what I'm saying? So when you're thinking about status and when you're thinking about building or community or whatever you're trying to build, you have to think about your security. And you have to think about how to get the proper security that you can, the proper security that you need to do what you have to do. Now, the next thing, okay, the next question that I have, I keep talking about the village. Remember, now in Africa, this is what we talk about. It takes a village to raise a child. We hear that statement all the time, but we don't have a clue to what it means. Same thing when we read the Bible. We don't have a clue to what they're talking about in there. You know what I'm saying? And when they say it takes a village to raise a child, we don't have a clue to what they mean. We've been sojourning in this country for 250 years under the Black Power thought process. We're still in trouble. We still don't have nothing. They're still treating us like crap. You know what I'm saying? What is the problem? Do we need another Marcus Garvey, another Noble Drew Ali? Do we need another Elijah Muhammad? Do we need another, Nat Turner? What do we need here, you know, to actually get back to where we're supposed to be? The key, they're giving, the Africa's giving you the key, but you're not listening because you don't know what the key is. The key is your village. That's what's missing. The groups are using their group as the village, but the families don't get strong under none of these groups. The families don't get strong under the churches, don't get strong under the mosque, don't get strong under the black organizations, under the power organizations. The families are not getting strong. And if your families, I use the term family loosely because that's what we're used to in the thought process that we have, okay? So so be mindful of the word family. It's not really, it doesn't really mean mama, papa, baby, but that's a whole nother lecture, okay? But the families, our tribes, aren't getting stronger. And if the families don't get stronger, we'll never get out of this mess, okay? The families have to get stronger in order to get out of this mess, okay? That's why we have launched, okay, a village movement. Right? We're trying to bring our villages back. We need these villages because without the villages, you don't have no power. This is where the power is coming from. The power is not coming from the organization and the groups that you're in. Okay, we weren't going to talk about black power this and power to the people and all this good kind of stuff. They're taking the people's money, using it to buy all kinds of crazy stuff with it. These preachers are living in $5 million houses and everything, and the families aren't getting stronger. The families aren't getting stronger. Some of these tribes or families, I'm using them interchangeably now, but some of these families or tribes are 1,500 to 2,000 strong. That's enough to tip a mayor a race and put the mayor that you want in office if your family was organized. You follow what I'm saying? I mean, think about the power. We're talking about a family. Now, if you got two or three families connected to each other, there's your village. And each family is 2,000 or 3,000 strong, that's 6,000-7,000 people. That's an economic structure. You can buy from each other, network with each other, and business and everything else. You can move into an area that's blighted, okay, like some places in Camden, New Jersey, that's blighted where they call it real bad. You can move into an area like that, take over the entire county. See, then you can put your own representatives in office, your own district people in office. You control an entire district. And when you get to the point that you have enough families connected, all right, you can control the city. You can put your own mayor in office, your own police department. How to, you know what I mean? You can work the school board. You can do all of these things if the villages were, if the villages start being reconstructed. All right? You have to start reconstructing the villages. All right? Now, remember, all you got to do is hit one if you have a comment or you want to say anything, okay? And I'll open your mic up right away. And once again, I'd like to thank everybody that's on the line for calling in. We appreciate it. I appreciate you calling. Let me know that I'm not alone in this mess. But I'm just giving you a dose of the real reality, all right, and what's going on and why we've been failing. Nobody's figured this out, but it's in the Bible. Where did I get it from? How am I getting these thoughts out of the book? And every time I read the book, this sounds like a bunch of nonsense to me. Remember the story of Abraham, okay? Abraham started with just him, his nephew, and his wife, Sarah. After they sojourned for some years, okay, his nephew got kidnapped by another group. He took an army to go rescue Lot, his nephew. Where did he get the army from? You understand what I'm saying? Where did he get the army from? The army came from the village that he was developing through the family and the babies and the wives and the marriage and all that. That's where the army came from, all right? Now you say, well, I was sacrificing my children. Well, when you put, remember, okay, somebody hit one here. I just want to say this right quick and then I'm opening the mic up. Remember the story when Abraham was getting ready to sacrifice his child? See what I'm saying? Oh, he can put his child on somewhere. That's great. No, the military It's where you sacrifice your children. Look at all the children that were sacrificed in the military. That's the altar they talk about. The military, are you ready to give your children up to the military to fight for what you know to be right? That's what that story was all about. Hold on, we got a caller. I think that's 2691. Your mic is open. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes, I do, Brother Elohim. This is Queen Tahira from Sign of the Times Blog Talk Radio. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. How are you doing? It's good to hear your smiling voice.
Ashe, likewise, likewise. I love the bills, love the energy, and love the jewels that you're dropping. What I'd like to ask you is from a biblical perspective. There are a lot
okay.
of things that provide us direction in there. And one of the things that I found that holds us back as a community is the fact that we can't seem to get past conflict resolution. So from a spiritual perspective, what does the scriptures say as it pertains to resolving conflict amongst the family? And with that, I yield.
Well, that's the first thing I talk about every time I open a show, because that's the problem that we're having. And the 1% has not trained us on how to love each other. That's where the conflict is coming in at. Once we learn what love is and how to love each other, the conflict will begin to disappear. Love is the act that makes others feel good. And if you never commit an act that makes the other person don't feel good, where's the conflict? There won't be any. But you have to learn the other person. Now, a lot of times we learn the other person, but we push their buttons based on what we've been trained by this culture. You know, I want to see if he loves me, so I'm going to do this, or I'm going to make him jealous, or I'm going to make her jealous. Well, see, that's not love, you know, because you're committing acts that make the other person feel good just to check to see if they care about you. Their actions will tell you whether they love you or not. The actions will tell you whether they care for you or not, you know, and that's the most important thing that we have to learn. We have to learn how to love each other, and we can't take tips from these TV programs that's got us dealing with dysfunctional families and all this stuff that's promoting as normal. Those families on television are not, that's not normal behavior. You know, they got one show, got the little boy talking about he want to kill his mother and all this kind of stuff. You know, they got the bestiality and everything else. So we have to just step back for a minute, okay, and think about practice of love. We have to learn how to love each other. That's what's missing in the groups. That's what's missing in our homes. And that's the key to ending the conflict.
I certainly agree with that. Yeah. And I was just wondering if there was particular scripture, since you mentioned the Bible, that deals with that. You know, if it addresses the ills, if you will, of our community, certainly somewhere in there, you know, I get the love factor, and we promote that all the time on Sign of the Times. But like I said, from a scriptural perspective, you know, what is quoted and what have you found that works? So thank you for answering that, and I'll go back into to listen
more. Okay.
Thanks.
Okay, well, I'm going to leave your mic open. But now, Yahshua says, love ye as I have loved you. See, that's the key to the whole thing. Because you can't, if we use the way Yahshua treated the people as an example of love, that would be better for us, because some people hate themselves. You know how he used to say, treat me the way you treat me, the way I want you to treat me, the way I want you to treat me, treat me the way I want you to treat you. I forget, that's how it goes. But I don't want some people to treat me the way they treat themselves, because some people hate themselves and they don't know how to treat themselves. So if they can't treat themselves right, how are they going to treat me? See, some people, they're doing drugs, they're drinking, all this, you know. How can you love yourself putting all that poison stuff in your system? Please don't treat me like that, you know. But we have good examples. Gandhi was a good example. Muhammad was a good example. So then we have lots of good examples of how to love each other, you know. And those are the examples we need to take. And I like the examples that Yahshua put out because of his humbleness. Because he said, he that eateth of me will become a son indeed, and greater works I did, you would do. He lets you know, hey, you can do greater than what I did. I'm not the end-all, be-all. He's telling them that, you know. But the ministers aren't giving us the information properly, you know. Just like when I ran the thing about jurisdiction with Herman Pontius Pilate, that was a jurisdiction issue, and the whole judicial system is set up based on that passage, you know. Mm-hmm. Now, if you want more information about law and the Bible, there's a website that I gave out. It's called scdm.org. You can go to that site, and they have the whole Bible broken down from a legal standpoint, you know, and it will give you more information on what this book is about. Because
can you repeat that,
I've read quite a SEDM.org. You know?
Okay.
Yeah, it's a huge site. You're welcome. It's a huge site, okay? Now, now what we're pushing right now, what I'm pushing, okay, we need to bring the village back. That's the key to our power. Without the village, we're not going to make it. We're going to be right back here. We're more segregated now than when Martin Luther King was here. You know, one of the most segregated cities in the country is New York, up north. It ain't got to be from down south. See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And Marcus Garvey came, you know, Muhammad Ali came, Elijah Muhammad then came. Everybody then came, but we're still in the same condition because what they were doing, they were using their organizations as a village, and everybody was pouring into the organization. But the families weren't getting stronger. And the chain is only as strong as its weakest link. So if we don't get mama and them babies and papa and all that strong and, you know, and healthy, get that family structure strong and healthy, we got a lot of weak links. And they capitalize on that and they destroy us with that. So this is I'm glad you asked the question, because that's the next portion that I'm getting into, is to village. We're starting a village movement, and we want to push to get the villages set up and moving properly, okay? Now, you might ask yourself, what is the village movement? The village movement is, these are the questions that I've written down that I want to talk about. Now, the village movement is we want people with the thought process to start reaching out to their families out of love. Teach them how to, be an example of how to deal with love as an act that make others feel good, you know. And when you're around them, you only commit acts that make them feel good. So that begins to ease some of the conflict, because the 1% is training us globally, okay, so that they can misuse and take advantage of us. That's what's going on a global thing. Now, once you start getting the villages set up, then you start thinking about security. Now, we're setting up, in fact, we just had a birthday party. We have family birthday parties every month. Whoever's in that family, they come in, they pay $15 and bring a dish, and that puts money into the bank for the village, you know, that we can use to do things with. But that's what the village movement is all about. Find a way to interact with your family, your aunts, your uncles, your cousins, one and two and three times removed. Find a way to get to them. And I think that we have misused or been mistreated about we've been misinformed about the holidays. Every holiday, we got some kind of problem with the holidays. Another thing that I'm going to talk about. Why aren't we using the holidays properly? That was the next question, because we don't know how. I remember coming to the Nation of Islam. They're talking about, don't practice Halloween. That's the devil's holiday with the goblins and the witches. But don't get into Christmas, because that's dealing with Nimrod and paganism. And don't get into Thanksgiving, because how the Indians was treated and so forth and so on. But that's the hype. The holidays are for uniting and meeting with tribal members, with your family. That's what the holidays are for. So we have to get away from the hype that they're giving us and start using these holidays to get together, you know? Okay, if you're Muslim, you just have to put that aside for a minute and go in there and deal with your family that got that Christmas tree over there, you know? sit down and talk and come and, you know, spend time with your family. Get to know who's who and what's what. That way you know what's wrong and who needs help here and who needs help here. Now, we're in the process of creating jobs for the family members now that we're all coming together every month. We're learning that some members don't have jobs. Some members are broke that we didn't know. So now we're setting up a job situation. And I'll tell them, anybody that don't have the money or $15 to come to the family reunion or come to the family event, call me. I have a job for you. You know what I mean? So now I'm learning, you know, and that's what the village is all about. We have to create jobs. Once we get the job situation, and once you start creating jobs and you need security, then you have to teach them how to handle the jobs, right, that you're creating. So when they go to school and get out of school, you bring them back to you because you have work for them. And the villages begin. So that's my main message for today, right, is that we want everybody that's in the sound of my voice to start thinking in terms of building that village. That's why we're failing. Families have to be strong, you know. Start reaching out. Do whatever you have to do. If you need some help, you can give me a call. My number is 97215-977-0777. It's not hard to read. It's pretty easy to remember. 215-977-0777. And I take calls from 9 to 5 Monday through Saturday. I don't take calls on Sunday. I kind of be running a little bit on Sunday, you know. But call me anytime, and I can help you with organizing and getting the villa together. I can help you with licenses and things like that there if you're trying to create jobs for the people in the tribe that you have. Now, here's the biggest problem. This is the biggest problem that I'm having right now. We have been abused and misused in this culture, right? But when you analyze the people that are in your tribe, when you start dealing with the entire diaspora, all five tribes are there, black, brown, red, yellow, white. And the people in your family that's part of your tribe, they don't hate you. They don't have the disrespect for you that maybe clan members might have, you know, or maybe some religious groups that might have. You got some Jehovah's Witness that just strode off. I know, because my father was Jehovah's Witness. I got people in my family that are Jehovah's Witness. And try talking to them sometime about something. Oh, my goodness, you know. But you have to let go of the hatred. You have to just let it go. And people ask me, well, Brother Elohim, do you have any enemies? I said, I don't have an enemy in the world. But I have people that perceive me as an enemy. All right, this is what I'm going to talk about. So I don't have any enemies, but if I know I'm going to the area where the clan is, I'm going to adjust my actions accordingly because I know that they perceive me as an enemy, even though they're not my enemy. So when I go to that area, if they don't bother me, hey, nothing happens. If they don't bother me, I don't bother them. That's what I'm saying. But if they bother me, I'm ready because I know who they are and I know where I'm at. So it's just a difference in thought process. You don't have to have enemies. You don't need enemies. You need friends. You need people to work with you. You know what I'm saying? But you gotta you gotta remember though, you do have people that perceive you as an enemy, and you have to adjust your thought process accordingly when you're in that area or around them. That's my thought process on the whole thing. Okay. And once again, I'd like to thank those who are on the line. I appreciate you calling in and listening. Let me know that I'm not alone and it's good. So the thought processes that I'm giving out, a lot of times it offends people. It bothers people sometimes, okay? That's not my intention. My intention is to give you a different way of thinking about what you've been getting all your lives, all right? That's why I talk about the Bible so much because you had Constantine and the boys took this book and conquered the planet. We read it and throw it in the trash. What are they reading that we're not reading? When they read the Bible, what are they seeing that we can't see, you know? just like the our mistreatment of women and the way we treat other females out there, you know? There's passages in the Bible that goes against that type of treatment, you know, when you really get into it. If you really understand how to read that book, especially when you get down in Revelation, it says no Greek, no bond, no male, no free, all are equal. And that's the, we have been programmed to put one over the other, or the other one over the other, but in my thought process, this is where I live at, you know, okay? Now, I know that we live in different places, and I don't try to encourage nobody to shift places, because if you're comfortable where you live at, you need to stay there, okay? Because sometimes when you switch at the wrong time, it could do you more harm than good, you know? But where I live at, men and women are equal. I don't see no difference between the two, because I'm not looking at the shell that they're living in. I'm looking at that powerful spiritual consciousness that's inside that shell. And there's nothing more powerful than that spiritual consciousness. This is why when I'm around the different colors, as we call them, or people, right, I don't see good or bad or important, not important. I see powerful consciousness that that I respect. And I deal with people on that particular level. So I don't deal with male should rule, female should rule. I don't get into any of that. You know, this is just where I live at now. So I'm not saying that you should live there. You got to be where you're comfortable at. And the different thought processes that we're under, that's part of what makes the village strong, okay? And if you really, if you really see what you see in a certain way, then really that's where you need to be at, you know? And when it's time for you to change, you'll know. So don't have people force you into changing where you live at, because you need to change where you live at when you're ready. It's like I said, I'm not into the Black Power movement and all that, but I have brothers and sisters that are Black Power conscious, and they're strong with it, you know? But I don't want them to change, because they're comfortable there, you know? You know, so I want them to stay where they're at. I know how to talk to them. I know how to communicate with them. We can talk along those lines, because I'm not trying to get them to switch from where they are. I like them just where they are. If they're comfortable there and they're happy there, then I like them, because we can work with the different thought processes. See what I'm saying? If we just use what love is. Love is the act that make others feel good. And if you check your tribal lineage, you have all five tribes, Black, brown, red, yellow, white. All the tribes are represented in your family, okay? Now, like I said, I use that word family loosely, but that's where we programmed that, you know? Well, since I'm throwing the word out there, let me say why I use it loosely. Because the family is not mama, papa, baby, and so on. That's not the family. That's your tribe. The family is the economic structure that you use to take care of your tribe. I don't know if you are familiar with the movie The Godfather, and this guy was sitting there saying, "Oh, Michael Corleone, I want to have my own family." This guy was married with three kids. What is he talking about? He wanted his own business so he can take care of his tribe. That's what actually a family is. The economic structure that you have to take care of your tribe. There's other meanings for family out there, but that's the one that I use. That's the one that I like. And we have to get back to the tribal thought process where we have villages. Now, the villages are made up of different tribes. So when you get huge tribes coming together, working together, you have a village. And you can literally control areas of the city. This is why I push the village thing so much, because when you think about what happened in Harlem, right? I mean, we own Harlem. But you go there now, we don't own all that stuff up there no more. The banks done took it all back, you know? And it's a little difficult to see solid black areas up there right now. You know what I mean? Because the bank switching everything around. That's because the village wasn't there. See, we move into an area, and most of the areas that we're in, we're calling them communities because a lot of well, I'm sure black, but a lot of black people live in that area, so we call it a community. But it, without the village structure, it's just a staging area for the banks to take the area back when they're not making any more money off the real estate. Once they take those 20 and 30 year loans out, once all those loans are paid off, the banks aren't making any money, so they restructure the area to get one group out and get another group in so that they restart the area so the banks can keep making money. So we don't actually have communities in this country. What we have is staging areas. So I encourage everybody that's listening, I'm going to be talking about this a lot. I encourage everybody that's listening, start building your village. Start where you are. You can start right now. Just start reaching out. Figure out some kind of way to begin bringing your family together. And I think the one thing that you have to do, and this is so important, is begin to become an example of how to deal with love. Love is the act that makes others feel good. And if you're in a conversation with somebody in your family and the conversation starts not to feel good, you got to switch it up. Okay? You have to take low. That's another thing that's hard for us to do, to take low. Oh, yeah, we get to stick in our chest now. Well, I'm so-and-so. And, but you have to take low. You have to humble out and bring the conversation back with a love fest, you know? Person talking and it's making the other person feel good, you know? And if you begin to live like that, the relationships at home will change, you know? When we hook up as a couple, who's going to pay the rent? Where does the money come from? Who's got the jobs? Who's going to take care of the babies? Who's going to walk the dog? That's living together, and that has nothing to do with love, see? Now, from this culture, from the male perspective, if he's the breadwinner, taking care of the family and paying the bills, he thinks that's love. That's what the culture teaches him. But that's not loving your wife. That's y'all sharing life together. You see what I'm saying? It's one thing to share life together, but it's another thing to learn how to love each other. The little small things. I have women call me all the time and they say, my husband don't know me at all. We've been together for 15 years and he don't know me. See what I'm saying? Because what he thinking love is, it's not. And I said, well, you have to teach him how to love you because he doesn't know. You know what I'm saying? And and this is what we have to learn. Now, a lot of women, they know how to love. You know, I just use this as an example. We only got about 8 minutes left here. But I use this as an example of pretty male and female, right? If you give a woman, let's say, some money and tell her to go buy stuff for her husband, when she go buy, he'll be dressed sharp as I don't know what, and everything will fit to a T. See what I'm saying? Because she's been learning him. She's been loving him all this time. Get a guy the money. He said, oh, man, he calling me. Oh, my clock is wrong. I'm watching the clock on the laptop. I only got about 90 seconds here. But he had to call his sister or somebody else and trying to find out what to buy for her, what's petite and what's oh my God, they got so many different sizes for the females. I don't know what to buy for her because he hasn't been loving her. See what I'm saying? I'm watching a movie, Enemy of the State, right? This is Will Smith. I know I've said this before, but this is Will Smith. He's going to buy a present for his wife. So he's going to buy a bra. And she asked him what size. She said, he play with them things every night and don't know what size they are. I'm just saying, you know. Because guys don't know how to love because society, this culture, isn't teaching the guys how to love because that's the building block for the family. I only got about one more minute here, you know. Sister Sarah was on the line. I apologize. Would you take a minute and tell them about your show? Sister Sarah?
Yes, sure. We air Tuesday through Friday on blogtalkradio.com, and the title of the broadcast is called Sign of the Times. We've been on for almost 5 years now. So it's a labor of love committed to the black community, and our platform is based around turning the struggle into a strategy, one conversation at a time.
Thank you very much. And that phone number is?
917-889. Yeah, 917-889-8059. And don't forget to push 1 to come into the queue.
Okay, well, that will conclude our broadcast for today. And I want to thank you once again for listening. And we'll be back next Sunday for more tidbits on how to get together and love each other and become a strong community, okay? And I will see you next Sunday. Much love.
Sure.